Welcome to Kind to Your Mind. Thank you for listening. 2020 has certainly been a challenging year for most, and finding ways of combating stress, anxiety, and depression are important to a healthy mind and body. In this episode, we're looking at wellness. Joining me is Paula Edwards. She is a mindfulness teacher and assistant practitioner at the Mindfulness Hub within the Psychology Department at Merseycare NHS Foundation Trust. She started a career in healthcare as a nursing assistant in high security and has also been a peer tutor at the Recovery College Merseycare NHS Trust. Paula, welcome.
Hello, Ian. Thank you for having me, inviting me.
Great to have you along. I mean, let's start first up by asking the question to you. Can you tell us a bit more about what mindfulness is? I think it's a phrase that has increasingly been used and has increasingly made an appearance more mainstream, shall we say, over the last few years, and particularly, I suppose, during 2020, when maybe people have been struggling with their stress levels for whatever reason. What is mindfulness and what does it mean to you?
I guess the easiest way to explain what mindfulness is possibly to offer a quote from Jon Kabat-Zinn. Jon Kabat-Zinn was a founder member of the Mindfulness-Based Stress Reduction Program over in America, which was founded in 1979, and the program has run ever since. And his quote would be, "Mindfulness means paying attention in a particular way, on purpose, in this present moment, and bringing qualities of non-judgment to the attention."
Okay, so just relaxing and concentrating on your present situation and taking time for you.
Absolutely, and it's sort of inviting your attention to mind, emotions, sensations in the body, in this moment. This moment's the only moment we've got in reality, isn't it?
What are the benefits, the main benefits of practicing time for yourself and mindfulness?
Well, I guess it offers an opportunity to pause and to be with you for you. So the benefits are vast, and there's been thousands upon thousands of peer-reviewed scientific papers to prove the benefits of mindfulness. And that it can enhance mental well-being, physical well-being. There's been many studies that have evidence-based that there's a reduction to chronic pain. It can support reductions in chronic pain. And a few other benefits could be anxiety, stress, depression, exhaustion, irritability can decrease with regular sessions of mindfulness meditation.
Why do you think that, you know, taking the time to think and give time to yourself has such a massive effect?
Taking the time out to pause and to connect with self, it changes the makeup, it changes the neuroplasticity within the brain, it changes the endocrine system, it increases the immune system. It actually can alter the grey matter within the brain, which is all proven by science. I'm not a scientist or a neuroscientist, but all these things have been proven. So in taking that time to pause and connect and really drop into you, because we spend so much time upstairs in our minds, cognitively worrying, planning, thinking, and we very rarely take time to drop down into the body and connect with our whole being, if you like. And the moment we take that step back and pause, things begin to alter and change within the body and the mind, the plasticity of the mind.
The mind is a fascinating thing, isn't it? And obviously it's something that we always have with us, you know, all day, every day. What do you think some of the common misconceptions are that people can have about mindfulness when that term is used? And obviously it's the correct term, but when perhaps some people who maybe are not familiar with what mindfulness is, what are they getting wrong when they're sort of maybe a bit sceptical about the power of it?
A good way to answer this would be in an orientation session, which we would always begin with at the beginning of any 8-week mindfulness program, we'd ask the participants what mindfulness is and what mindfulness is not. And we perhaps do that by asking, was there any concerns or any hopes for the course. And a lot of the concerns are, what if I can't clear my mind? What if I can't relax and be calm? Mm-hmm. What if I can't get rid of anxiety? So there's a misconception that mindfulness is any of these things, because mindfulness isn't about clearing the mind, which is a pretty big misconception. People arrive on a mindfulness course wanting to clear their mind, wanting to become relaxed. And being human is messy. So yes, sometimes the mind will clear and become quiet and settled. And sometimes the body may relax, but equally it may not. And mindfulness is about turning towards, with gentle kindliness, whatever is present in this moment. So it is a big misconception that mindfulness is somehow pink and fluffy, and that we can clear the mind and that we can aim for this relaxation. Because it mindfulness is not about fixing or changing anything or wanting things to be different. It's about being with what is, which isn't always comfortable. And a misconception is that, you know, practicing mindfulness can get rid of difficult thoughts and feelings, which isn't so. With a lot of practice, like learning any new skill, we can become more adept at noticing difficulties, stress, anxiety rising up in the body, mind, or even emotions. And we can skillfully learn to meet these things in this moment and make wise choices, build a different kind of relationship with. So rather than responding to difficult thoughts, difficult emotions, or difficult sensations in the body, rather than to knee-jerk react, to sit with these difficulties, or indeed pleasant thoughts, emotions, and sensations in the body. And we might choose to respond in a different way.
You've mentioned there about people maybe joining a program of, say, 8 weeks, and maybe they're going there thinking that perhaps they might be finishing 8 weeks from now in some kind of Buddhist-like Zen state. And obviously that's not what it's about. But what sort of things on one of those courses, if people were going to do some kind of mindfulness course, whether it's one that you do or maybe one of the others that are available in the world, what sort of journey would that really take them on specifically through the course of studying mindfulness? What sort of things would you think that they would find out about themselves perhaps through the course of that?
Attending a mindfulness course, initially, basically, it's learning a brand new skill. So you are not going to turn up at the beginning and all of a sudden, that's it, I'm sitting in the lotus position and everything's fixed, everything's going to be okay. It's hard work. It's hard work like learning any new skill. So you wouldn't jump on a snowboard and expect to be able to just jump off a piste somewhere and not hurt yourself. Just as you wouldn't enter a French lesson and expect to be fluent in French at the end of the first session. So it really is hard work, and it's the amount of work you put in. I feel you may reap the benefits. And the first half of the 8-week course, so the first 4 weeks, is about recognising what's here and connecting to. So really recognising and noticing patterns within thoughts, patterns within emotions, and patterns within physical sensations. And noticing how much the mind gets taken away. We get hijacked by the mind all the time. We are cognitive beings. We live in our heads, most of us. And in the first 4 weeks, it's almost training your attention. So if you wanted big biceps, you'd pick up a pair of dumbbells and you'd start pumping iron, and you'd notice the structure of the muscles changing over time. Well, working with attention has the same effect on the brain. So you notice the attention being hijacked away. And with gentle kindliness, you may invite your attention, It could be back to the breath. It could be back to something visual, sound. It could be back to emotions, sensations in the body. And the mind will wander 1,000 times. And each time the invitation's the same to bring the awareness back. And that's like a rep for your bicep. It's a rep for the prefrontal cortex and the brain. So you're building your attention muscle up, if you like, your focus muscle. So the first 4 weeks is connecting with that and connecting with self. And it can be difficult for people because we do live busy lives and we're sort of conditioned and our minds are meaning-making places and we want to make sense of everything. And we tend to make sense of the world through our minds, through our brains. So in the first 4 weeks, we invite people to gently connect to the body and notice what the body is telling us. Our bodies are really wise and we very rarely listen to them. So we might get all caught up in stress and anxiety and it's generally really cognitive thinky-thinky. And we miss that our shoulders have gone up and our chests are tightening, or we're holding our whole skeleton tightly with tight, tense muscles. And we miss that because we're too busy upstairs in our minds. So mindfulness gently invites us back down into our senses. And acceptance is a big part, that the mind will wander. Time and time again, it's what minds do. And that's okay. It's not a mistake to get caught up in thought, because the moment we notice we're caught up in thought, that's the opportunity. You're back in the here and now, back in awareness. And you can choose where to take your awareness in any moment. So the first half of the course is all about recognizing and noticing. And then the second 4 weeks, 4 sessions, is all about connecting with and acting skillfully. So you've noticed reactions in the body and how you can respond to. And in the second half, it's connecting with and skillfully using your mindful attention and awareness to rather explore the difficulties. And if it's too overwhelming, maybe choosing to step back from and take your awareness somewhere else. It's a real skill, and it's for life, not just the 8 weeks.
Paula, we've talked about what mindfulness is and also what mindfulness isn't. I'm just wondering now if, for the benefit of myself and for people listening to this, if we can look at how people could use mindfulness in their everyday lives. You know, what steps can people do to take some time for themselves and have some mindfulness? And maybe this might be their first experience of it, having heard about what mindfulness is, even if just from yourself just before there. So what are the first steps that we can take on a mindfulness journey?
If we go back to the beginning of the podcast, and all mindfulness is an invitation to bring awareness and attention into this present moment. And it can sometimes be helpful to imagine that awareness is like the beam of a torch. And wherever you shine that torch, you're guiding your focus and awareness to that area. That may be helpful, it may not be helpful. And I'd like to invite people, if it feels okay for them, to bring that beam of awareness, to bring their awareness to vision, to seeing, and perhaps, if it feels right, holding your hand out in front of your face. So in a comfortable position, and just bringing your awareness to the palm of your hand. And already the mind might be getting involved, thinking, what is going on here? Where's this going? And I'd like to invite you to notice the thinking and fall below any thoughts about what we're doing and directly connecting with vision and what you can see at the palm of the hand. Perhaps noticing lines, maybe lines within lines. Perhaps noticing texture. maybe noticing colour. An invitation to stretch the fingers out so the palm of the hand becomes plain, and perhaps noticing any sensations as you do this stretch in the hand, perhaps pulling in the fingers, pulling across the palm. And maybe connecting with the changes of colour within the palm as you release the stretch. Perhaps noticing less bleaching in the hands, the colour becomes more intense perhaps. Gently being with, noticing what's here at the palm of the hands, as best you can. No right way, no wrong way. Just choosing to place your awareness in this moment, visually connecting with your hand. And perhaps choosing now, if it's comfortable, if it feels right for you, to make a gentle fist. And as you do this, really connecting to the movement and the sensation in the hands. Perhaps noticing light and shade across the knuckles of the fingers. Or maybe not, maybe noticing lines, noticing the shape, and an invitation to open the hand out now. And if it feels okay for you just now, an invitation to take the index finger of the opposite hand, and we're going to trace round the hand now, mindfully, in this moment. Perhaps tracing up from the base of the thumb, breathing in. Tracing down the thumb, breathing out. Tracing up the forefinger, breathing in, and tracing down the forefinger, breathing out. And with the rhythm of your breath, tracing round the remaining three fingers. That's connecting with the touch, temperature of the both hands, simply being with as best you can, no right or wrong way. And an invitation now to perhaps shake the hands out, noticing any sensations of the handshake, and come into stillness or a comfortable posture. And there you have it, connecting with the here and now. You may have found that simple or quite difficult to keep your concentration and awareness there. And all mindfulness is noticing that, noticing what is here precisely in this moment as best you can.
That was brilliant. Thank you very much for that. And hopefully people listening to this enjoyed that as well. And it's amazing how when, as you say, I think there's a phrase that you used before about using your mind and keeping your mind in the present. And obviously focusing on your hand there forces you to do that, doesn't it? And why is that? And what other ways can people keep their minds in the present? Because it's a very specific term there, but obviously our minds are always with us. But is it doing activities like we've just done there? And are there any other things that we can do to help us focus on our own minds?
Of course there is. And it's a little more than focusing on our minds. It's all, you used a term then, keeping our attention in a certain place. Mindfulness would always be invitational, with sprinklings of kindness really, and curiosity, real curiosity, to what's here in this moment. And your body is available to you in every moment. You'll hear a lot of people who practice mindfulness using the breath to bring their awareness back to, but we're a whole world of sensations. We have got touch, taste, vision, hearing. All of our senses we can come back to in any given moment. And it may just be to check in. Are we hungry? Are we thirsty? Are we warm or cold? The basic human needs that often go unattended because we are so caught up in our minds. And the minute we think, I'm going to drop in, I'm going to drop into me, my body, which is always here, we can maybe connect with some of our needs and begin to support ourselves. But again, it's easier said than done. It takes practice. Society has us busy in our heads, and societally it is busy all around us as well. So it can take but a second, this second, to drop in. And it may be to sit and watch movement in a tree. We've just watched movement in a hand, but it could be we decide to sit in a park, even for just a couple of minutes, to notice the movement, maybe not thinking so much that's a tree, but noticing the shapes, the colours, textures. It's there always. This present moment is here always, to drop into any one of our senses without judgment as best we can. There's it's not goal orientated at all. Simply being with what is, which isn't always easy.
No, I was going to ask you as well. I mean, you've clearly been involved in psychology and mindfulness for quite some time, but how have you noticed the demands of people change over the course of this year with what 2020 has brought us? And at the moment, we're recording this during the second national lockdown. Have you seen an increase in people seeking help with mindfulness through the course of this year as a result of what's happened?
The demand has got greater because we never used to have staff drop weekly drop-ins, which are well attended. But the process of mindfulness and dropping into self in this present moment, being available or always in this moment, hasn't changed. The earth beneath our feet supporting us all hasn't changed. We're still connected, breathing the same air. It hasn't changed. Our bodies pointing upwards towards this sky hasn't changed. And the effect of stress and anxiety on the body hasn't changed.
When do you think and how often do you think people ideally should practice a little time for mindfulness?
It's available in every moment. So I choose certain points in the day to practice. I have a routine. Routine is key in well-being, full stop. Without mindfulness as well, isn't it? Routine really serves us as human beings, exercise, food, etc., etc. And I've slotted my specific mindfulness practices into my day. So it may be that when you're taking the dog for a walk, rather than just getting it over with and getting it done, or getting annoyed when the dog wants to pause and have a sniff, perhaps taking that moment to just drop into this moment too. And perhaps notice, lift your head up, look up towards the chimney pots, and perhaps notice the sky. Or at the traffic lights, drop into the body, and if you're tense, maybe let go of some of the habitual holding.
Just taking that time to appreciate the world around you and just let your mind slow down for a moment. I suppose you're right. We're always thinking. We're always rushing to the next task, the next thing, or whatever. And it's just taking that moment just to appreciate. Where can someone go if they'd like to learn more about mindfulness, either via yourself in Merseyside or any other resources that you would recommend that people can look up wherever they may be?
There is a whole plethora of information on mindfulness online, but I would add a little take care to perhaps explore what experience a mindfulness teacher has got. So if you're thinking of maybe wanting to attend an 8-week course or maybe a taster course, it might be worth checking out. There's a website called the British Association for Mindfulness-Based Approaches. And on this website is a list of national teachers who have all gone through quite intensive training, because we need to contain safety and care when we're inviting people to turn towards the difficult as well as the pleasant. So it might be worth just checking out that the teacher you choose is a registered mindfulness teacher.
Fantastic. Well, thank you very much for your time and taking us on that journey and including a starter's experience of practicing some mindfulness as well. It's very useful, and hopefully other people will be inspired to go on and try more of it as well. Paula, thanks very much for joining us today.
Thank you, Ian, for inviting me onto the podcast. I am absolutely delighted to have the space, opportunity and time to do a little bit of myth busting and perhaps lift the magic veil off mindfulness and offer its offerings, warts and all.
Thank you to Paula Edwards there for joining us on Kind to Your Mind. And thank you for listening. And please subscribe and rate the podcast. We do appreciate it. This series is in conjunction with your local councils and the NHS in Cheshire and Merseyside. For more information, visit kindtoyourmind.org, where you'll find lots of information and resources, including top tips from the Every Mind Matters campaign and ALMA, an online wellbeing portal for those living and working in Cheshire and Merseyside. Until next time on Kind to Your Mind, stay safe and goodbye.